Once upon a time, there were three writers. They stole a prompt, uttered in real life, and ran with it. Bella, hit the theme tune.
I'm on strike.
Bella, you never have a theme tune, you're permanently on strike.
Yeah, I know, I'm on strike until I can do my uncensored, brilliant theme tune. Therefore, I am on strike. And refuse to be your dancing monkey, Izzy.
Aaron, hit the theme tune.
Oh goodness, I wasn't prepared for this either.
You did a lovely song earlier for us.
There we go, that's our theme tune.
There we go. See what that strike did for you, Bella? See how much impact it had?
Don't pit us against each other, Izzy.
So, this week, our prompt was... Bella, do you want to read the prompt?
Oh, jeez. Give me some... I've got blimmin' 500 tabs open. Give me some warning.
We have a lot of pieces for you today, everyone.
Goodness gracious. Goodness gracious. The prompt was a double prompt, and it's everyone else is dressed in suits and ball gowns, and I'm dressed like this. As well as, I didn't know what to bring. I have a jar of peanut butter and two forks.
How did you guys find the prompt?
I managed to combine them, and that surprised me.
Yeah, I actually also managed to combine them, which was a surprise. And I also wrote a script, which I've not done ever before, apart from writing Little Mermaid the pantomime. So this was a new one.
Yeah, so for this prompt, I really took it in a great direction where I had 10,000 words to write this week. And so I have done the most horrible thing, which is not bring a piece this week.
Well, have you brought a jar of peanut butter and two forks, seeing as you didn't know what else to bring?
Yeah. Here they are. You can see them on the screen now.
Izzy, wonderful. That's a pair of scissors. That's a pair of scissors.
Let her dream, Bella.
Where's your imagination? No, it is peak term three. Assignments are really racking up for me, and I have basically I'm working on a screenplay at the moment for an assessment, and I was gonna take an extract of that one to prompted, but because it's a whole entire film, it's not just a short film, a little section on its own wouldn't really work. So
these two prompts both came from the same day but entirely different conversations, so I'm happy they fitted together for everyone.
Yeah, how did they come up?
So the first one was my friend who, when we went to a ball and you guys were both there, and the theme was Enchanted Fairy Tale, and my friend meant to go as an elf and then realised that his costume wasn't going to come in time. So he came in, he tried to make himself a shirt like they wear on Merlin, you know, like those shirts but with string on the front. He tried to make himself one of those. So, of course, everyone's in suits and prom dresses, and he's just there in his shirt, looking like a peasant, which meant that he has to... the entire night, he just keep turning to me and go, Erin, I look like a peasant, and I just start, like, singing the Merlin theme tune.
And Erin, that's so not helpful.
It lightened the mood. And the second one was from an improv scene that happened earlier the same day. And in the scene, one of my friends was acting, and she was meant to be a teenager that had run away from home to go to her granddad's house. And if anyone who's done improv will know that if you start listing things on stage, you can go on forever. So she started listing the things that this teenager had brought when they ran away from home. And it was a ridiculously long list of the weirdest things. And just the end thing on the list was a jar of peanut butter and two forks. And the audience were just... in pieces. That's where they came from.
I still just love, Erin, that you are welfare of improv, and people went up to you having a confidence crisis, and your response is to start singing the Merlin theme tune.
It wasn't a confidence crisis. It was more of a just, how on earth did I get into this situation? But she did look very much like Merlin. I did tell him this.
Speaking of welfare, Bella used to be a welfare for a different society. Should we go into your piece?
What was that segue?
That was a very strange segue, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
It was a dated one.
Yeah, so my piece is a script, and my genre is realism, kind of kitchen sink realism as well, but it's a bit gritty. So this is the script I wrote, and it's called 129 Culpeper Close. It begins in a kitchen. Stage left, there is a door leading out to the hallway. Stage right, starting with upstage, there is a refrigerator, a countertop with a kettle, some tea bags and some coffee, a metal sink is installed, filled to the brim with dishes and cups, a dirty electric stove, and a tall houseplant on the floor. Centre stage, there is a cheap rectangular wooden table littered with coffee stains, scorches and scuff marks, surrounded by four collapsible metal chairs, left and right. Lights are soft, and thin shadows, both horizontal and vertical, suggest daylight through a window. It is autumn. The deathly silence of the room is punctuated only by the tap consistently dripping. Enter Vivian, stage left. She is wearing a polo shirt, a black skirt with some tights, with an apron tied around her waist. The uniform is typical of a generic high street restaurant. Her hair is in a ponytail and a pen is tucked behind her ear. She is tired. Vivian draws out a chair and sits facing stage right. Her legs are spread boyishly. From inside her apron pocket, she draws out a pack of cigarettes and a plastic big lighter. She takes out one cigarette, leaving the pack on the table, and puts it between her teeth, failing to light her cigarette. Bugger! She tries and fails a second time. Damn it! Bugger you to hell! She throws the lighter onto the table, angry, but then contemplative. She pulls the cigarette from her mouth and replaces it in the pack. I should quit, really. Probably. Mayhaps. There are several moments of uncomfortable silence. Vivian sits quietly, staring at the houseplant. The tap drips. What day is it? Wednesday. She gets up, walks over to the plant, and kneels, placing a hand to the sod. It's dry. Dry as a bare-ass bone. She gets up and goes to the sink. She sorts through the dirty dishes before pulling out an unwashed glass and filling it with water. Carefully, as if handling an infant, she brings the water over and pours most of it into the plant pot. There is a pause, and then she returns to her previous seat at the table, glass still in hand. I swear, I must be the only one who cares. She drinks slowly from the glass. There is the sound of a key turning in a lock, and then a front door opening. After a moment, the door stage left opens, and Skipper enters. He is wearing dirty jeans, a grey vest, and a dirty yellow high-vis jacket. Vivian does not react to his entrance and remains facing stage right.
Hey, Viv. Oi, Viv.
Hey, Skip. How was work?
Nah, Viv. Stupid it was. Got me going from 7 to just 6, moving brick-like. And not new stuff, old stuff. Bollocks, to be straight. My lung's now more brick dust than lung. Viv?
And your head more brick dust than brain, like?
Huh?
Oh, nothing, Skipper. Have you spoken to Richard?
Nah, he's a busy man, see? Like us. Like us.
He reaches into his pocket and pulls out a packet of cigarettes and a lighter. He lights his cigarette first try. Oi, Skip! She slides her pack over to him across the table. Light me one, please.
Here, take mine. I have one of yours. Ah, yes. Yours are nicer. Smooth-like. If I close my eyes, I can feel like a proper rich bloke in a swanky office or such.
Those ain't mine. Those are Mo's.
What? You nick 'em?
No, she gave them me. Why do you say that like?
Just kidding, Viv. Take it easy.
Me too. Kidding, I mean.
Our fun has too many layers nowadays. Can't tell what's what or who's who and that.
For you, mayhaps. You got brick dust for brains. Brew?
Always. Always.
Vivian gets up and moves stage right. She fills the kettle with water and flicks the switch. Looking warily at the sink again, she removes two mugs from the washing pile and quickly rinses them. There's a thoughtful pause, and then she rinses a third. She puts a tea bag in each one.
I'm starving, like Viv. Would you make food for us?
I don't know, Skip. She goes to the fridge, opens it. It's empty except for a few condiments, a carton of milk, and several bottles of beer. We ain't got nothing. Not even butter, like.
Bread?
You had the last of the damn bread this morning, Skip. Help yourself, leave your good friend nothing, as always.
Man gotta have his breakfast, Viv.
Woman gotta eat too, Skip.
You ate breakfast, you daft cow. Viv?
Yeah?
I'm joking again.
I know you git. They both look at each other a moment, contemplative. They both have reached the end of their cigarettes. Vivian turns to finish the tea. Should we call Richard, like? He could pop to the shops on his way back. She sits down again, this time next to Skipper, facing stage left.
Nah, we'll just call some in. Been aching for Chinese food anyways. What's that place down Sanders Way?
I'll call him. I know what you all want, you boring, repetitive tits. She exits stage left. Skipper sips slowly at his tea. After a moment, he takes out his phone and begins scrolling, laughing hollowly every so often. The tap drips. Enter Wick, stage left. He is wearing nothing except a towel around his waist. His hair is wet, as if he has recently stepped out of the shower. He is in a rush and stumbles as he enters.
Christ.
He rights himself, running a hand through his hair.
Skipper, mate, I need to borrow some boxes.
Why's that, Wick?
I ain't got any clean. Come on, Skip, I'm late already.
For what? You don't work Wednesdays, I thought.
Allies need someone to fill a spot tonight for their live show. Just give me a call 10 minutes ago.
Wick, mate, it's coming on 7. How are you only realising now you ain't got Queen Kex?
Been sleeping.
All day?
Was tired.
The bloody cheek. Just turn yours inside out.
What if I meet a bird?
Skipper laughs harder.
All right, settle down. Are those cigs yours?
Nah, Viv, she nicked them off Mo, didn't she?
Nice one.
He puts a cigarette in his mouth.
I'll see you later then, yeah?
Yeah, mate. Want to get you some crab soup?
Hell yeah.
As he moves to exit stage left, Vivian enters, holding a takeout menu in her phone. They run into each other. Wick moves around her, hand on the door.
Ah, sorry, Viv.
Yeah, sorry, sorry. There's a tense pause. Wick exits stage left. Where's he off to? It's Wednesday.
Got a gig down alleys. He'll still want some crab soup, though.
Right, okay. She sits down opposite Skipper, who slides her the mug of tea. She takes a long drink, the menu set out in front of her. Then, with a brief glance at the menu, she dials the number. There's silence as the phone rings, except for the tap, dripping. Hello? I'd like to place an order. Delivery. 129 Culpeper Close. The lights dim. The tap drips ever still. The kitchen, again. It's much later at night. The lights are harsher and more artificial, rather than soft and dewy. There are now takeaway boxes stacked up on the counter next to the sink. The sheer number of dirty dishes has not decreased. Vivian is sitting at the table, stage right, upstage, holding a hand of cards. She has changed out of work clothes and wears jeans and a vest now instead. Her hair is down and there's a hole in her socks. Her feet are on the chair and her knees are tucked under her chin. Her expression is focused. Skipper is sitting at the table stage left, upstage, also holding a hand of cards. He has changed into clean clothes but wears the same sort of outfit. Worn jeans, a vest, but now with a ratty dressing gown on top. He is leaning back in his chair with his legs spread. His expression is gormless, as typical of his character. Richard is sitting at the head of the table upstage, also holding a hand of cards. He is wearing a white shirt, untucked, black trousers, and a tie is hanging loose around his neck. He hasn't changed out of his work clothes, but he looks comfortable. He has his elbows leant on the table, and is also staring intently at his hand. All three of them are slowly and steadily working their way through several bottles of cheap beer.
Whose go is it?
Your Skip.
Oh. Viv, you got any tens?
You already asked me last turn. Go fish.
Christ's sake, I'm bored.
Just because you suck at this, mate.
No, I'm bored, right? Wonder how Wick getting on, like.
Dunno. Last I heard, he was out of tune.
Heard from who?
His bedroom.
Nah, really. He hardly stops, like.
He takes a gurgling swig from his beer.
Don't know much about guitar, though.
Don't take much expertise to know he's both sharp and flat.
You've seen yourself lately, Viv. Sharp and flat all over, I'd say.
What's that supposed to mean?
What do you have for brekkie, Viv?
I don't like breakfast.
And lunch, then?
Coffee. What's your point, Rich?
You'll blow away if you keep on.
Who's you to tell me what's what? I'm busy, Rich. We've not all got posh offices and pretty girlfriends.
I'll drink to that, eh?
You ain't gonna get a pretty girl bird if you're a waif, Viv.
I don't care what you think.
Can't you just have more than tea and cancer for breakfast?
Ark at you! He's a top man now he works at computers. Got one lucky shot and you think you're better than us, do you? She opens a cupboard and takes out a mostly empty jar of peanut butter. He smokes menthol vape now and eats French omelettes for breakfast, like. She sticks her hand in the jar and gets her fingers sticky with peanut butter. What a fancy old Rari is now, eh, Skip? Well, she licks some of the peanut butter off her fingers. Here's a bit of breakfast for me, like. And now, she wipes the rest of the peanut butter on Rich's white work shirt. Here's a bit of breakfast for you. Then we're both same as each other, right, Rich? Vivian shakily downs the rest of her beer and then storms from the kitchen. Richard is looking forlornly at his shirt. It's likely one of the only nice ones he owns. Skipper is tapping his own beer nervously like he knows something important.
You had no right.
I know, mate. It's not her fault.
Just leave her alone, would you?
Right.
There's a long pause. The tap drips, beating out each second.
Perhaps we should see how Wick's coming, you think?
Yeah, sounds good, mate. Which pub?
Ali's. Easy walk.
Give me a minute. Can't go dressed like this. I look like a real nutshell, eh?
Good one, mate. Funny.
Lights dim.
Oh, sorry, guys. My voice went really low there.
Oh, that was amazing, Ellie. That definitely wasn't your boyfriend who you just called in.
No, goodness. It's just a... The Northern brought, like, the masculine low notes out of my voice.
I mean, as nice as it was for Hamish to step in, I'm still not sure that could be called Northern. But it was much better than what you were attempting, Izzy.
Hey. Hamish's dad's Northern. Oh. I thought Hamish was our best bet.
I mean, my dad is also Northern, Izzy, and you've heard mine.
So, I know that Izzy didn't hear that piece, but did anyone want to talk about what they... Because it's my first script and you guys are seasoned script writers and I want to get your advice.
I did read it over the voice actor's shoulder and I really like your use of stage directions. So me and Bella were talking the other day about, because we were having this debate because Bella obviously doesn't write that many scripts because she hasn't brought many to Prompted, whereas I'm like, script writing is my natural thing, and so I was saying, like, Bella, like, how come? And you said about how, like, you really like in the novel that you get to sort of decide what's going on, whereas in a script it's kind of more of a collaborative thing and so it's harder to assert your vision over it. So I really like that in this script what you've done is you've used your stage directions as a way of showing what you want, and you've really got like a really strong authorial voice over the script so that everyone kind of knows what the characters are and what the setting is, and it means that you have more of the say. And it reminded me of Tennessee Williams's script writing.
I was about to say that when I wrote this, I kind of used Streetcar Named Desire as like a template. But like, because I really, when I studied him at school, I really enjoyed reading a lot of his stage directions. So I tried to kind of like be quite heavy on what I wanted the set to look like and the people to look like.
I like how in your piece you can write very ungrammatical language and it still makes a lot of sense and it still feels really natural to say. That was very cool.
Maybe I shall attempt scripts more often.
So,
please do.
I think you should. I think you're really good at it. I think you've got a really good style, and I really like the sort of updated Tennessee Williams vibe that you have going on.
Thank you.
And your dialogue is just perfect. Like, with all of the dialects that you put in, like Erin said, and it just flows and works so well. So that's really... That's like the hardest thing to get right is dialogue, and you've done it really well.
Thank you very much.
Speaking of... getting things right. Erin's perfect. Let's move on to Erin's piece.
I am by no means perfect. Okay. I use spy as my genre. I don't read or watch a lot of spy stuff, so this should be fun. Kix's voice tended to get screechy when they were uptight, and it was even worse through the earpiece.
Are you in position? Willow? Because if you're not in position yet, we're behind schedule and...
Will you just relax?
I felt my hand twitch with the reflex to put my fingers to my ear. It was loud in here, and I had to concentrate to make out their voice above the general chatter and classical music of the party. The room was enormous, with chandeliers high enough to accommodate the ridiculously lavish chandeliers that hung from them. But judging by the jewels adorning the necks and cufflinks of the guests, they were used to this kind of place. I wasn't.
Do you have eyes on them?
I turned subtly to see her, a waiter in a crisp black uniform, holding a tray of drinks aloft. She was careful not to catch my eye, but I recognised her from the photos.
Yeah. Should I follow her?
No.
I heard Kix typing.
You shouldn't take the same exit. I'll walk you through another route. Do you have a glass in your hand?
Oh, you know I don't drink.
I don't mean to drink, idiot. I mean as a prop. Act natural.
I took a martini glass off the tray of the nearest waiter and drifted towards the doorway opposite the band. The waiter had vanished. If she wasn't at the meeting place, this would all be for nothing.
You need to take the next right and then...
Kix's voice was interrupted by a sudden crunching. My mind, trained as it was, instantly jumped to breaking bones and smashed computers.
Kix? Kix? What's happening?
I'm fine.
I heard them swallow.
You know I eat when I'm nervous.
That had better not been peanut butter straight out of the jar again.
They were doing that a lot lately. Not that I blamed Kix. Sorry. Not that I blamed Kix. The explosion that had taken out our home base, along with most of our friends and co-workers, had shaken us both pretty badly, but Kix had it worse. I had been out training when it happened. Kix had been about to enter the building. The burns on their face were bad enough to prevent them from ever going on field duty again.
Take a left. Can you see a corridor with strip lights?
The fancy wallpaper and furniture in the party room had been abandoned. I was in the service part of the building, reserved for staff. If I did come across any other waiters or cleaners, my fancy dress would stick out like a sore thumb, but I needed it for when I returned to the party. I should have thought of bringing a change of clothes. A rookie mistake, like Boss used to say.
Okay, take another right turn and they should be there to meet you. Got that weapon?
Obviously.
I slid my hand into my pocket and felt the cool metal.
Good. And the plans?
I'm not a complete idiot.
I felt in my hidden pocket for the memory stick. I felt the fabric of the dress, the tech Kix had insisted I take, and lint. Nothing else.
Oh no. No, no, no.
Willow?
Kix was at the peanut butter again. It muffled their words.
You okay?
The stick's gone.
It can't be gone. You took it, I saw you.
Do me a favour and check it's not with you.
I heard Kix rummage through the files and tech that littered their desk.
It's not here. I'm telling you, you packed it.
And I'm telling you that it's not here.
I tried to swallow my panic. Boss had taught me a special way of breathing to calm nerves, but Boss was in the graveyard several miles away. They couldn't get me out of this one.
Could someone have taken it out your pocket?
I don't know. I thought I was being careful.
Not careful enough. Willow, she'll be waiting for you. What are you going to tell her?
You have the backups, right?
Yes, but if someone else has the stick, then...
They trailed off.
Kix, put it together.
I just activated the tracker in the stick.
You put a tracker in it?
Of course I did. I'm not an amateur.
They were typing frantically now.
Willow, get out of there.
But the plans?
The waiter has the stick. The one that's waiting for you. Get out. I can direct you to an exit, but you have to go now. Turn and go to...
Kix's voice broke up into a buzz of static loud enough to make me flinch. It didn't sound like a connection error. They were too good for that. Someone was disrupting the signal. I took the weapon out of my pocket and aimed it at the sound of approaching footsteps.
Damn.
It's all gone horribly wrong.
I love that the spy isn't just, like, the typical dumb spy. They're trying really hard, and it's just not working.
I mean, all the other ones are dead, so I feel like they've just been left with, like, the spy that has no training. And the tech that's just eating peanut butter.
Yeah, it's so dark with the stuff that happened before. So is it an explosion or something?
Yeah, I don't think that was really clear in the thing. I think there was... And, you know, because I was thinking of the Skyfall movie, you know, where there's an explosion that just takes out the entire base and they're just like, oh no, we have literally no spies left in this part of the country. I feel like that sort of thing was what happened. But I'm not very familiar with spy genre, so it went a bit weird.
I've not seen a lot of James Bond or anything like that myself, so...
I've seen Kingsman. That happens in Kingsman, doesn't it? That's a spoiler. It may or may not happen in Kingsman.
Nicely done, is he?
I think it's... Yeah, I know. Nicely navigated. No one noticed that. No, it's a really good trope that I like, because it's like the spies have this big base and security, and they have this whole network and ranking system that has been built up by loads of years and years of tradition, and then suddenly just gone, and the few people who are left have to pull together, even if they're in completely random departments. And I really like that trope.
Talking about random people banding together from different departments, we've got Jamie's piece this week.
Yeah, so at Jamie, our author, did a really good piece where he basically took the two prompts and he morphed them together. I think the first prompt takes up the first half of the story, and the second prompt takes up the second half of the story. And I think it's really clever, and I'll read this one. I do not tend to embarrass easily. I never really have. I remember clearly the time I called my teacher mum, the laughter of the classroom, and how little I cared about the barbs and japes. Intellectually, I can understand why it might be embarrassing to someone. Emotionally, it had no effect. It's been the same as an adult as well. I have torn my trousers at work and carried on as if nothing had happened. I had been sick at work in my own bag, without batting an eyelid. I have even sent a rather risque picture of myself to a colleague, instead of my ex-girlfriend. It was not so much the embarrassment, so much as the bollocking I received from the boss which riled me. So, as I stand here, wearing what I feel are a fine pair of jeans and a shirt, it bothers me, not one jot, that everyone around me is resplendent. That everyone around me is resplendent in gowns or tails. Yes, they look sharp, regal almost. But looks are not everything. The woman in the corner eating peanut butter with a fork can attest to that. Sometimes, we have to think of comfort first, and comfortable I certainly am. And this is part two. I'll join the dance eventually, I will. Yes, I've been telling myself this for the last 2 hours, but I will do it soon. Just as soon as the song I know comes on. I wish that scruffy guy would stop looking at me. He looks infinitely more ridiculous than I do, and I can hide the jar, but he can't hide his shabby garb. I knew I wouldn't like any of the food. I know I'm fussy, but I bet half the people here don't actually like mushroom risotto. They only ate it to be polite. I had considered bringing a sandwich, but the crumbs would just get everywhere. A nice clean jar and two forks. I was in a rush, so I grabbed what I could. Are much easier to slip into a spacious clutch. Ooh, I think I know this song. Yeah, definitely. I'm going in. If I plan my route around the floor just right, I can sneer at the wretch as I pass. I'm sure the peanut butter will taste all the better once I've strutted my stuff to a song or two. You are the dancing queen, young and sweet, only 17.
How do we think these people were going to meet?
Ooh.
Would they become friends, or would they hate each other?
I sense a romance.
I feel like there'll be a rivalry. Ooh. I feel like they're the two slight outcasts of the duo, aren't they? So they could either end up shoved in a corner together. So maybe the romance. But I reckon there's like a rivalry, you know. I reckon they're both looking at each other thinking, well, at least I'm not the strangest one. Yeah, I reckon these two could quite easily ruin the wedding. The fact that the first guy has no sense of shame or embarrassment at all, I reckon he's just going to be up doing karaoke and just completely just take all the attention away from the couple.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this piece. I really enjoyed that it's got Jamie's comedy on it as well. I really like that. I really love his style. So thanks, Jamie, for sending that in. And now we have the secret thing that's in place of my piece. Erin, do you want to announce it?
Absolutely. So I have made a quiz for you guys, and it starts off with easy questions and then it gets into harder questions.
Oh.
So we'll see how it goes.
Are we against each other?
You are against each other. Do you have anything you could use as buzzers?
I wasn't prepared for this, though.
I've been born
ready for
this.
You could make a buzzer noise if you like. You could just do like a meep, and that's your buzzer noise.
I can probably create a buzzer noise. Hang on, give me 2 seconds. I reckon I could do it. This is
okay, I'm
this
ready.
This is my buzzer noise. Are you ready? Is that okay?
Really, Bella?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was worried it was going to be what you want the theme tune to be.
I was tempted, okay. But...
All right. Are you guys ready for the quiz?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Question one. A prompted episode was recorded and lost due to a technical difficulty. Which prompt was used on it?
It was episode 9.
I don't think I was on it.
Bella was dying for this one.
Yeah.
This is when you got called for an ambulance, so we had Alex and Wilkie, and... You said that they start easy, Erin!
Right, too slow, we're moving on to the next one.
No, wait.
Oh,
no!
Don't look it up, but you're looking it up! Prompted episode 9.
Okay, you have 10 seconds. 10.
It's not the sofa. It's not the... After the sofa, it's the...
She's checking on Spotify, for sure.
I'm not checking on Spotify.
One. That's it. You're out of time. We're going on to the next one. The correct answer was the ravioli ritual.
No!
Oh, I was on that one. I just couldn't re-record the second bit because I was really ill. Okay, yeah. I was on the first one.
Question two. Our first episode was called The Glass Box. What genres did everyone use?
Meow.
Okay, I think it was Izzy and then Bella, so Izzy you go and then Bella goes.
Damn it.
Okay, I used fantasy.
Good.
Oh, what did you guys use? I'm gonna do some guesses. I think I used fantasy. I think Bella did poetry. And... I think Erin did action.
You are incorrect for those other two. Bella?
So Izzy did fantasy. I think I did comedy.
Oh, I remember what Erin did.
No, that was the next one. No, I can't remember now. I thought it was comedy, but it's not. Damn
okay,
it.
That's Erin, 1 point crime? To Izzy. Question three. What are the two variations of our intro that Izzy uses?
Meow.
Yes, Izzy.
So I do, once upon a time, there were three writers who sold a prompt uttered in real life and ran with it. Bella hit the theme tune. I also, the other variation is... I don't know if this is a variation, but for season 2, I forgot to put in the sentence of three writers, Izzy, Bella, and Erin.
2 points to Izzy.
Yes.
Right. Question 4. In which episode did Bella first describe her poetry as white noise? Yes, Bella.
I feel like I should know this, so that's why I did the buzzer. My poetry was described as white noise in, I want to say, episode 4.
Can you give me a name for that episode? I'll give you the point, but can you give me a name?
Oh, episode 4, and it was called, oh my god, I'm trying to think of my poem. Oh, the fingerprint, yeah. the one with the stuff on the wall.
Point to Bella.
Yay!
Question 5. In our announcement about the show in the face of the pandemic, how did I describe everyone's reactions to it?
Meow.
What?
I put my hand up and then realised that doesn't work in podcast. So it is, you said, Bella will keep writing outrageous stuff even if no one's listening. Even if no one's there to listen, you said Izzy, something about Izzy's never gonna let Prompted go, and Erin's still gonna be writing sci-fi even if the apocalypse happens or something.
That is. I'll give you 2 points for that because they were slightly incorrect, but I'll give you that.
How do you remember this stuff?
They were Erin. It would take an actual alien invasion to stop me writing sci-fi. Bertha would keep writing creepy pieces even if there was no one left to be unnerved by them, and Izzy would resort to carrier pigeon before she let our social media die. Okay, question six. When we first started airing, we were unsure what content we could include. In episode 2, The Chart, Bella's characters drink alcohol, but she briefly changed it to something else in case we weren't allowed to feature alcohol consumption. What was that drink? Bella.
Meow.
Chocolate
Bella
milk.
Bella, before you... Chocolate milk. Point for Bella. All right. Question 7. Which poem do I say into the mics when we pre-fade? I say the same one every time. Bella.
It's not something by Edgar Allan Poe, is it?
No.
Is it the Jabberwocky?
Yes, it is. Point to Bella.
Yeah!
Okay, question 8. Name all our guest writers from university so far. So this isn't counting people from Instagram, this is just university. Bella.
This is Alex back. Healy, Peter... I've forgotten a lot of people now. They've just got out of my head.
Izzy, your turn.
Wait, Hamish.
What's the question?
There's Emma and Beth and
you're missing one person.
One person am I missing?
Izzy knows, I can see it in our eyes.
I don't know what the question is.
Oh, he doesn't know what the question is. I don't know the last person.
The last person was Wilkie.
Oh, Wilkie has been on, Wilkie has been on. I was going to say, has Wilkie been on yet, but no.
Okay,
he's going to be on next episode as well.
He is. Okay, question 9. In the sofa episode, I scared Izzy by putting on a creepy voice to read out one of Bella's pieces. What was the name of the character I was playing?
Oh, I don't know if I even remember.
Bella does really novel-like names. Like, their names are really artistic, but they're not... You wouldn't just meet someone... There's not, like, someone you'd meet on the street, like John. It's, like, artistic. Like, Susannia.
Susannia.
Do you want me to give you initials?
I think it begins with... No, it doesn't. Okay.
What's the initials?
Was that a buzzer, Bella?
Yeah. Was it Paloma?
Yes, it was. It was Paloma Robinson.
Robinson, okay.
All right, we're on to the last question. This is, in my opinion, the hardest one. Okay.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Question 10. In the episode The Fingerprints... Izzy asked Bella and I the word for a musical term before we went on air. What term did she end up using?
Gosh, okay. It was a word for slowly. Oh, I need to buzz. Meow. It was...
Yes, Izzy.
It was... No, it was a word for continuing. It was like coda or... Maybe not, because Erin's not nodding.
I'm trying to remember because I play piano, so I'm not sure which one it was, but I'm trying to think.
Adagio. That's.
I'm going to give you a 10-second limit.
Pizzicato.
It wasn't staccato. I was going to say staccato, and then I realised it was wrong. Wait. Is it? Wait, I need to buzz. Is it legato?
It was not. The term Izzy ended up using was crescendo.
Oh, I should have said that. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, I'm afraid Bella has won that.
Yay!
Bella, you have won. No! Izzy, I will do another one and you can battle again next season.
Does that mean I get to take over Prompted? Does that mean I own Prompted now?
That was not on the cards, Bella.
Kenneth owns Prompted.
Right, Prompted from now on is going to be PG-18. We can talk about whatever we want. Everyone is given free speech. There will be no more censorship. And I will come up with a beautiful theme tune. And yes, that's the future for Prompted. You're welcome, everybody.
I can't. Izzy,
I don't know what I've done. I'm so sorry.
You created a monster. A monster.
I'm not a monster.
That's exactly what a monster would say.
Okay, so next week's prompt, which will happen under Bella's reign, is... This is quite fitting, actually, considering Bella now has taken ownership of Prompted away from Kenneth by winning this quiz. Kenneth, I hope you enjoyed Prompted for the 1 week that you technically totally owned it. The prompt is, you like dystopias, right? Yeah, but not living in them.
Hey, why do you make that sound like living in a world where I run Prompted would be a dystopia?
No reason.
It would be a utopia. Everyone would be free and at peace.
I'm saying nothing. I'm doing a Bella. I'm going on strike.
Oh, listeners, you're going on strike.
Listeners, if you tune in next week and it's just me, it's because Izzy and Bella have killed each other in assassination plots to try and own Prompted. Wait, can I be the heir to Prompted? Wins. So if Izzy is currently the ruler of Prompted, Bella is the opposing force. Does that mean I'm the heir? So if you guys knock each other out, I'm the only one standing.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to be the heir.
Aaron gets the deciding vote.
I'd have to recruit for my guests.
Well, next week we've got Wilkie on as well, so that's going to be cool. He wanted to do this one because he's really into world building and stuff, and so he really liked the prompt, the idea of a dystopia. We are coming towards the end of our show, so thank you so much to our prompt provider, which is Aaron's friends, and probably by default my friends as well, because that's how it works at uni. And thank you so much to you guys for listening, and thanks so much to our writers for this episode, which is Bella, Aaron, and Jamie. For more prompts and writing, go to our Instagram, which is @PromptedWritingPodcast. If you want writing advice or you want to share your responses to one of our prompts, DM us. You can find us on Anchor FM, which distributes us to Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. And thanks again, you guys, for listening. Goodbye.
Bow, bow, chow, pow, what did I tell?